Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
I'll tell you what, I'm honored, a bit surprised that Orlando Franklin would even be, never mind, in the city right now. I was wondering if he'd even be in the country or if he'd be in Toronto right now, getting ready to celebrate the parade of his Toronto Raptors.
You know what, Mike? I turned down the opportunities to sit here and do a show with you. You know, I thought about it. I definitely thought about heading back to Toronto and being able to celebrate with the city an NBA championship, the first NBA championship. That's been a long time coming, but I said, you know what? I haven't sat with my guy Mike for a while. It's always fun doing the morning show. So I'm not going to go to Toronto. I'm going to choose to wake up at 5 a.m. in Denver instead to get here with you and hang out with you for a couple hours.
I don't think that – I think this is the first time you and I – by the way, Orlando Franklin in for Mark, who's off today. I don't think – I think this is the first time we've done the show together since the big chicken wing contest.
That I won, yeah.
You did win.
Yeah, since the competition that I told you that you there was no way that you were going to win. But you were impressive.
Come on now.
And literally.
There was a time there I put a little bit of a scare into you.
Oh, yeah. No, listen, I got to 70, and my whole plan before that was get to 74. That's your number. That's what you were in college. That's where you are in high school. That's what you are in the NFL. Get to 74, and I literally got to 70. And I was done. So I'm happy that you finished a little bit before that and you couldn't get any more in because if you ate 71, Mike.
I would have been the winner, huh?
You're the winner.
Yeah,
no. There was no way I could have ate any more.
I got, at one point, I mean, you were hammering, you were smoking me pretty early and then I stormed back and at one point I think I passed you in the mid-50s.
Yeah.
And I thought for a second there. You know how runners get the runner high?
Yeah.
At that moment, I had the chicken wing high.
Yeah, you're going to get that, got that second win?
I had the chicken wing high going.
Oh.
And then, just like runners hit the wall, did I hit the wall? And then.
I hit it too, but you just couldn't see when I hit it. And I just had a little bit of a lead when I hit it.
Ugh.
So,
anyway.
I was in good shape.
Haven't done that. Haven't done anything since that. Day. I haven't done anything like that. Been trying to be a little smarter. That was kind of like, okay, maybe I shouldn't do that again.
Yeah.
That was a bit much. But good to see you. And I'm curious with the big story over the weekend, the passing of Pat Bowlen. I had a chance to hear a lot of reaction. What was your feelings about it? What are your feelings about it?
Pat Bowlen, you know, God rest his soul, because he was a great owner. The thing I loved about Pat Bowlen the most is whatever it took football-wise, it didn't matter. Even if it was something as little as, hey, we want po' boy sandwiches or we want sushi, he'd get it done for you. As a player, he'd get it done for you. Whatever you needed and whatever you wanted to change up, he was open to those suggestions. I showed up here in 2011, and that's the first time I got to – speak to Pat Bowlen, and I was able to put together the Canadian connection right away, which was really awesome. You know, growing up in Toronto, Canada, I had no idea that the owner of an NFL team has deep roots and was based out of Canada. So when I was able to put that connection together immediately in 2011, I was like, man, this is a match made in heaven. And just being able to now talk to him and being able to hear the different stories, because in 2011, that's when I met my wife, and my wife's father is Bobby Turner. So he was with Pat Bowlen for, I think it's about 17 years coaching here with the Broncos. And just being able to now put that connection with Pat and saying, hey, this is who I'm dating. You know, this is who I'm getting ready to marry, and being able to talk to him about these different things. And now find out a little bit more about my father-in-law. So now when he's grilling me, my father-in-law, I'm able to grill him because I got a little bit of that extra information from Pat Bowlen on him.
So he was genuinely interested in you guys as men, as people.
Yes, absolutely. And he would talk to me about Canadian football. And I would talk to him about growing up and just watching the CFL, not even watching the NFL. And he's like, really? Like, you never watched the NFL? No. I was like, no. For me, growing up in Toronto, I was watching Mike Pinball Clemens with the Toronto Argonauts. That's who I was watching. And he was like, well, that's changed now, you know, because you're a part of the Denver Broncos. And he would just always give this little smile that is just like, I wonder what he's thinking right now. And as an owner, I've been to other teams, Mike. The Broncos organization was a first-class organization. The greatest thing about Pat Bowlen was he wasn't trying to be a jack-of-all-trades. You see with Jerry Jones, he wants to be the general manager, the owner, the head coach, basically. No, Pat Bowlen was just the owner of the team. He gave the team everything the team needed, and then he took a step away. And what I'm always going to remember Pat Bowlen for is the stability that he brought to the Denver Broncos. You weren't changing a lot of head coaches. There wasn't a lot of upper management changement when he was here. He would literally let people do their jobs. He understood that he was the owner of the team, so he was going to get the team everything that the team needed, whether it was a food truck, whether it was the indoor facility, whatever guys needed when it came to football.
I think that's the one constant over the years, you know, some 20 years now for me covering the Broncos, and that's, I think, the one constant that has stood out in talking to you guys that played for Mr. B was the idea that whatever you guys needed, whatever you guys needed to win.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the one theme that I will take away from his stewardship of the Broncos was whatever you need. Yeah. What do you guys need to win? And I think we all out there daydream. We've all had the fantasy. Oh, if I owned a professional sports team, what would I be like as an owner? And I'd like to think that'd be the kind of owner I'd want to be. You know, somebody that, look, I'm not just in this for the bottom line. I'm not just in this for the business. And make no mistake, the man was a brilliant businessman. So many of the big advancements that the NFL saw, especially in television, he was a huge, huge part of. But it still came back to the idea that you could tell he got a kick out of owning a team.
Yep.
And he enjoyed winning. And he wanted to win. And that's what you'd like to think that every owner should be like.
Yeah, ultimate competitor. I mean, even towards the end when he wasn't involved, I remember my third and fourth year here in 2013 and 14, when he wasn't really involved day to day, you wouldn't see him as much. We still would do this weekly pick-ems for college football. And he'd get in there and he'd pull out his papers. And you see that he put a lot of time into what teams he was going to pick. And each and every week when we're talking about who won and who lost after that week, you could tell that he'd get frustrated if he didn't have a good week or he would just excited and wanted to celebrate a little bit if he had a good week. And that was towards the end, even when we all knew that he had Alzheimer's. And just an ultimate competitor, whether it was on the football field or just sitting in Greek's locker or Greek's office on a Friday and picking the college football week pick'em games. So he's always going to. That's what I'm always going to remember him for.
Great stuff. Great stuff. Well, the Broncos have a stadium without a name on it right now. Should his name be on it? We'll get to that. Plus, what is the fallout for the Nuggets from the big Anthony Davis trade over the weekend? That's coming up next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
Orlando Franklin sitting in for Mark, who is off today. He'll be back again tomorrow. And now that, you know, with the passing of Pat Bowlen, it's given us all a chance to kind of take a look at, you know, all the many different ways that, you know, he's touched this franchise, he's touched this city, this region, and
the question that's out there, Orlando, is should the Broncos Stadium, after, you know, for years now being without a corporate name, you know, slapped across the building, should it just be named after Pat Bowlen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. For what he's done for this city, for what he's done for the NFL, absolutely. I don't see anybody that would deserve it any more than Pat Bowlen.
Boy, you talk about legacy. That would say something. In an age in which we live in which it's all about chasing the corporate dollar when it comes to these stadiums, and most of us now not even knowing what these stadiums are called, right?
Yeah.
To be able every Sunday to have the nation tune in and see, you know, welcome to Pat Bowlen Stadium or Pat Bowlen Field or whatever you want to call it. What an amazing statement that would be. But would Pat Bowlen want that? I mean, here's somebody who was among the pioneers when it came to NFL owners who understood the direction that the league was going in, had to go in, how to maximize revenue, how to build the business of the NFL.
Yep.
So would he want his name on the stadium, or would he look at it and say, hey, whoa, no. I mean, hey, if you can get a corporate name on there and you can bring in millions upon millions of dollars that we can use to build a winning football team, that's what I'd rather you do.
Salary cap's a salary cap with the Broncos organization.
Cash is cash.
And
cash
the fans.
Is cash.
With the Broncos organization and with the fans, you're going to sell games out. I mean, that's just what happens. That's what just we do here. We sell games out.
Right.
So you're going to be able to get the revenue. And with the TV deals and all that, you're going to be able to get the revenue. I think Pat would love it because Pat did like a little bit of light shined on him. You see back in the day when he's wearing the fur coats on the sideline, and he did like to be seen. So I think he would like it. And just to be able to tune in each and every week, like you said, to hear, hey, the Broncos are playing at Pat Bowlen Stadium. You know, that would be a fairy tale ending to a great story. A guy that came here and accomplished so much. I mean, how do you not really give it strong consideration of putting his name outside of that building when you got fewer losing seasons than Super Bowl appearances? Come on, that's even just with that. Forget all the other accolades. Just with that, as a owner of a team, just with that, that doesn't happen. It might never happen. Well, it's not going to happen in my lifetime. I'm not going to be able to see another owner do that. So,
hey, put it this way, Big O. If you're a corporation right now, would you want to step forward and say, hey, we're going to put our name out there and have everybody out there in Broncos country going, boo, we don't want your name on there.
Yeah.
We want Pat Bowlen's name on there. Go away.
Yeah. Maybe, if I'm a corporation, maybe, I'm definitely thinking about that,
maybe
too.
Not the soundest of business moves at this point. Hey, big news over the weekend out of the NBA, the big Anthony Davis trade. He's going to the Lakers. Couple that with what's going on with Golden State. Kevin Durant will not play next year. Klay Thompson will be out until like the All-Star break.
Yeah.
So where does that leave the Nuggets in all of this?
The Nuggets got to get better. No matter what, you got to get better. You weren't able to get to the finals this past year, so you got to get better. You got to look to
make. What about the idea that they're just a young team that learned a lot and bring them all back and with a year of experience?
I'm not buying that.
Why not?
Because in every sport, no matter what, you have free agency. And whenever you have a young team, you always think that you're a player away or a play away. But you always look to get better. So you have this whole offseason now where you just saw the Lakers make a huge splash and get an Anthony Davis. And immediately in Vegas, they jump up the polls. And now they're the favorite to win the finals. Which it makes no sense to me because they weren't even in the playoffs last year, and you're telling me one person that you're going to skip from going just to the playoffs to all the way they're going to win the finals? It doesn't really make any sense to me, but the Nuggets need to combat that with getting better players because the Joker has struggled against great big men. Now you're going to have to play Anthony Davis many times in the course of a year. So are you going to struggle with that? And what happens with the playoffs? We saw against the Spurs where Aldridge came out and the Joker kind of struggled at the start of the playoffs. Well, we can't afford that to happen. So you need to go and get a number three. You got Jamal Murray and you got the Joker as your one and two. You got to go get your big three. That's what everybody's doing. And when I look at what's going on with the Lakers, getting AD, having LeBron, and now the reports of the Lakers gonna make a strong push for Kawhi Leonard, the Nuggets gotta look at that and say, hey, we cannot just rely on our young talent against this veteran leadership. We gotta go get somebody, at least one vet. I understand. You gotta go get, I would make a push for Klay Thompson. I would make a push for Kawhi Leonard and see what's going to happen, because it's not no guarantee that they just have to go to the Lakers. Why? The Nuggets were the number two.
Well, I'm glad you said Klay Thompson, because that's the guy that has always intrigued me. Now, he was always number one on my wish list. He'd be perfect for what the Nuggets need. But, you know, the understanding was always, well, Golden State doesn't want to lose him and he wants to stay with Golden State. I still think that will happen, but if there is any possibility out there that Golden State looks at and says, because I looked at the numbers over the weekend, in order to sign both Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant to max deals, it would cost the Warriors an added $168 million in salary, plus another $155 million by going over the luxury tax. Now, the owner of the Warriors is worth $3 billion, so he can afford it if he wants to.
They had tickets in the finals going for $128,000. A courtside ticket.
So,
one ticket.
So, but if there's any possibility out there that the Warriors are going to just try to go, like, just year to year with Klay Thompson and say, hey, look, Klay, well, let's just do it for a year. And let's see, get healthy, and then we'll come back, we'll do this all. If that is their thinking at all, if I'm the Nuggets, I swoop right in, max deal, here's the offer, we understand you can't come back until February, but we're more than good enough to be able to go out and lock up a top three seed without you, and then we get you back for the stretch run and the playoffs, and then we have you for another 4 years after that. Yeah. And we get to reap the benefits of what you are as a player, a leader, all your championship experience.
It's stability for a player.
It'd be a great move. Now, that's only based on the idea if the Warriors try to play cute with Klay Thompson.
Yeah, if they try to go year to year, absolutely. Yeah. You got to go for stability. As a player, you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, especially coming off of getting hurt in the finals right now, you got to think about that. So you got to think about what team is going to make the biggest commitment to you. And if they do try to do that, the Nuggets do need to go full court press in order to try to land Klay Thompson.
No, I'd like to see what you did there. Full court press. Very good, Orlando. Morning Brew is coming up next. All kinds of offense between the Rockies and Padres. Is that necessarily a good thing? That's next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evan.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your morning brew.
Things are gonna get weird.
You're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and coolers. Stat.
You know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What? Orange mocha frappuccino.
Damn, Jimmy. It's some serious gourmet shit.
Let's get it on.
Pitch to Garcia, runners goal line, drive left center field. That's a base hit. That may roll all the way to the wall. Manny Machado has scored. Hoppy's bringing home Myers. And on the way to third is Garcia. Ladies and gentlemen, your Padres have tied the ball game again. Rush.
That's the guy. That's the Rush guy. Padres radio right there. As Orlando Franklin in for Mark, the Rockies and Padres set a modern era baseball record by combining for 92 runs in a four-game series. And the question is that a good thing or a bad thing? Good from the standpoint that everyone loves offense, and there was plenty of offense, plenty of excitement. But Orlando, for the long run, I don't know if it's a good thing, because for one, just the war of attrition that it takes on your pitching staff to try to go through all those kind of games. And the Rockies were already having questions about their pitching staff, and those questions are only more pronounced after this weekend. And secondly, rightly or wrongly, there is a Coors Field bias that is held against some of their offensive players and then the numbers that they put up. And I'm afraid that after a weekend like this, it'll only give national baseball people out there more ammunition to just dismiss the accomplishments of Rockies players because of the Coors Field effect.
Yeah, because you got to start talking about the altitude. Is that the reason why
it's
they're
not
hitting
real
the ball?
Baseball.
It's not real baseball. I'm more worried about the psyche of these pitchers, you know, giving up that many runs. You don't want your pitchers to get in the tank. They got to be able to pitch better, you know, to be able to create all those 90-plus home runs or 90-plus runs in the last couple days. I just think that's a little bit too much. And as a professional athlete, you get down in the tank sometimes when you're not performing, and your pitcher needs to go out there and perform day in and day out.
Next on the Morning Brew.
Peyton Manning from the gun with pressure coming. Floats it for Demaryius Thomas at the five with the over-the-shoulder catch. He's into the end zone for the touchdown. Sean Smith beaten by Demaryius Thomas and a 6-0 lead for the Denver Broncos.
I always love hearing those highlights. Over the weekend, Peyton Manning was honored by the University of Tennessee in their Hall of Fame, but he also took time to shower praise upon Pat Bowlen and what it meant to play for Pat Bowlen and how Pat Bowlen's role and the way he ran the Broncos played a huge factor in Peyton deciding to come here. And, you know, when you look at and you divvy up the pie, so to speak, Orlando, as to all the reasons why Peyton chose here, do not underestimate the fact that, you know, he looked at a place where late in his career, he wasn't interested in going somewhere where it was going to be a rebuild. He wanted to come to a situation where he had a chance to win. And certainly the word was out long before then that Denver was a place that if you went to with the understanding you were going to be given a chance to win.
No. When you look at the history of the Broncos and you look at what they've been able to accomplish in just the six seasons, that six losing seasons under Pat Bowlen, if I'm a free agent, I'm definitely considering that. So at least Peyton had the right idea. When I hit free agency, Mike, I wasn't thinking like that. I was like, okay, I'm going to the highest bidder. That's it. If the Broncos are not keeping me, I'm going to the highest bidder. But Peyton was able to evaluate the whole situation and truly understand that Pat Bowlen and ownership was going to put him in the best position to win. And it was a win now situation.
Real quick, you talked about in the last segment about how he was more than just an owner, that he was genuinely interested in what was going on in your life. Peyton shared this. He said, quote, coming to play here for Denver, even though his health was declining, I did enjoy a couple of conversations with Mr. Bowlen. In my first year, I was here a lot in the offseason. As soon as I signed with the Broncos, I was basically living at the facility, studying film, rehabbing, working out. I was usually one of the last to leave the facility during that time. I thought I was the last to leave, but Mr. Bowlen was still there. He usually be in the training room on the elliptical, and I would go in there and have conversations with him. He was asking me if we found a place to live yet, and I remember once I told him we found a place to live. He told me he used to live right near there, and we talked a little about that, just short, brief conversations, and I enjoyed that time with him. Peyton Manning. Next on The Morning Brew.
With my first pick in the second round, I'm going with Anthony Davis.
You sure you want him to be your teammate?
I'm very sure of that.
Isn't that tempering?
No.
Lots and lots of fake media laugh there from guys that used to play.
Yeah.
I mean, that's talk about the worst kept secret in the NBA. And that, I think, is an issue that comes out of this whole Anthony Davis thing, is that everybody understood that LeBron James was courting Anthony Davis for some time now. And it just seems that there's so much focus on free agency that it takes away from what's going on the court. It was almost like a cloud over these entire playoffs. What, even while the games are going on, hey, what's Kawhi going to be doing? What's KD going to be doing?
Even and with Anthony Davis before the playoffs.
I think it's just a disservice, a real disservice to the fans who are trying to invest in a team, trying to invest in a player, trying to establish loyalty, buying their gear, and all they're hearing is that, you know, this guy is making, you know, goo-goo eyes at somebody else.
Yeah, it sucks for the fans, absolutely, especially in basketball. It's just unique. You don't really hear that come out with football because the trade deadline in football is a lot sooner. You know, it's a couple weeks into the season where that's the last time that you're able to trade. But in basketball, you're able to drag it out and really try to make a strong push, you know, almost about a month and a half before the finals start. So right there, if you're a Pelicans fan, you knew that there was no way that AD was coming back because it made it public. And that's unfortunate, you know, because that's the team that chose to draft him. That's the team that he was playing for. He played his heart out for the last couple of years, but as a fan, it just gets frustrating that it's just like, we drafted you, we believed in you, and now you're just leaving us to go play with this one player. Because if LeBron's not in with the Lakers, does Anthony Davis really go there?
No.
I don't think so. No. So now it's just one player is able to change your whole outlook and where you want to go.
Right. I mean, it used to be tampering was something that you would get hit with a monster fine if you were a franchise. Now the players are free to, you know, talk about whatever they want. And
NBA, you do whatever you want.
Exactly. Next on the Morning Bro.
You got to pay him this money. Sex agents are not going to let you come in under Carson Wentz.
Michael Irvin, the playmaker, says that the Cowboys must pay Dak Prescott. So over the last 3 months, we've seen Russell Wilson, Ben Roethlisberger, and Carson Wentz all land contracts that will pay them, you know, somewhere between $32 and $35 million per season.
Oh.
A couple of quick thoughts. One, it makes what the Broncos are paying Joe Flacco potentially for the next couple of years a real bargain. Two, is Dak Prescott worth that kind of a contract extension?
I look at what Carson Wentz did the year of the Super Bowl, and although they didn't win the Super Bowl with Carson Wentz and he wasn't the Super Bowl MVP, he went on a great stretch for them and just winning games after games, and that team truly believes in him. So for me, I think that these agents and these coaches and GMs should look at these veteran deals as a rookie pay scale, like how it's all slotted. Okay, you know, in the first round, the first overall pick gets $25 million and the second gets 23. Okay, well, look at it in the exact same light. Carson Wentz is getting 32, but he also has a Super Bowl ring. So, Dak, we're going to need you to take around 29, 28. You know, we take a little less because you don't have that ring and you don't bring that ring as well.
That'll do it for the Morning Brew. Bring that to you each and every morning at 6:30. Coming up, what is James Merrillat mad at this morning? We'll find out next. Time now. Let's hook up Orlando Franklin, by the way, sitting in for Mark Schlereth. Let's hook up with our buddy James Merrillat from 1043thefan.com. James, good morning. Now, you're always a bit of a contrarian, but, boy, you may have outdone yourself with a column that you're dropping later today at 1043thefan.com in which you're actually coming out and supporting Garrett Bowles.
Well, I'm defending him a bit. Listen, Garrett Bowles has struggled his first 2 years in Denver. Nobody would argue that. I guess my point on it is that it's not entirely Garrett Bowles' fault. You know, when he came into the NFL out of Utah, everybody said, hey, he's got a lot of raw athletic ability, but he's a little bit of a project. He's going to take some coaching. What have the Broncos put around him on that front? I mean, since Vance Joseph and his staff got let go in January, everybody has just been chucking all the coaches under the bus, how terrible they were. Well, then doesn't that apply to Garrett Bowles, too, that he didn't get very good coaching if that crew was so inept and not very good at doing their job? I mean, Jeff Davidson was here 1 year and got shown the door. Chris Strouser, it was his first time ever coaching in the NFL. So, listen, we can be critical of Garrett Bowles all day long for not listening to coaching, but maybe there wasn't anything to listen to there. So that's just part of it. I mean, he's also had a revolving door next to him at left guard. So there have been other reasons why Garrett Bowles has struggled, not just because, hey, Garrett Bowles can't play, Garrett Bowles doesn't work hard, all the narratives that we've been hearing of late. There's more to it. That was my point.
So how does he fix the want to? Because when I see Garrett Bowles give up a sack or I see him get a holding call, it looks like he doesn't really care. His body demeanor, his body language suggests that it's just like, okay, it happened, and that's what it is. So how do you fix that? Because I've never thought of Garrett Bowles as a person that can't play in this league. I truly believe that he can play in this league. It's the want to, the ability to be consistent out there that he's lacked over the first 2 years that I've seen him play.
Yeah, no, and I wouldn't disagree with that. I think, you know, body language is one of those things that is it's tricky when you're trying to read it, because I read it the same way you do. I read it and look at it of, hey, is this a guy who just doesn't care? But perhaps it's a guy who's frustrated. You know, those looks when you're analyzing body language are pretty similar, or you start getting down on yourself or those types of things. of a guy who, hey, realizes he just got beat, realizes he's going to hear about this in the media, realizes he's going to hear about it in film study. So, you know, we could be reading it that way. But listen, here's the other thing. I think Garrett Bowles is fresh out of excuses, right? The Broncos, to some extent, admitted that they hadn't provided him with the proper coaching by overcompensating and going out and getting the best offensive line coach in the NFL. So if Mike Munchak there mentoring him and helping him and showing him the way and guiding him, if that doesn't help Garrett Bowles, if Garrett Bowles isn't vastly improved after this season, well, then it's a Garrett Bowles issue. And it very well could be, because you're right, Orlando. Maybe it is a want-to thing. Maybe it is a passion thing. And we'll know that in 6, 7, 8 months. I just don't think we 100% know it right now.
Visit with James Merrillat from 1043thefan.com. Let's chop up a couple other topics. Should the Broncos Stadium be named after Pat Bowlen?
You know, that would be in a perfect world, sure. I love the sentiment. I think it would be great. But, you know, I guess the realist in me looks at that and says, well, that's just not going to happen. They're gonna slap some corporate sponsor on there and, you know, justify it with, we got to use it to pay for upgrades. And even though they use that same excuse when they raise ticket prices and any number of things, but, in a perfect world, if we were living in utopia, sure. I think that would be the ideal tribute to Mr. B.
The Anthony Davis trade, does this mean that the Nuggets go from staring up at Golden State as the ceiling that they can't break through to now staring up at the Lakers as the ceiling that they can't break through?
Well, probably. I mean, I do think it's a little bit of, you know, and you see that now that the Lakers are the favorite in Vegas, and that's a little bit of that is just the hype of now, and a little bit of that is, you know, people are going to go put money on the Lakers. They're a little bit like Notre Dame football that's just going to come flooding in on them. So, you know, it's certainly another team now that they have to contend with. And it's frustrating because, you know, the Lakers get rewarded for being totally inept for the past couple of years other than bringing in LeBron. Anthony Davis gets rewarded for basically pouting his way out of New Orleans. And a team like the Nuggets, who have done it quote-unquote right and have built from within, and you try and keep, you know, tell fans, hey, just got to be patient. It's going to grow. It's going to get there eventually. You know, is that really how it works anymore in the NBA? It's, you know, everybody talks about how the haul that the Pelicans got in terms of trades and future and all that kind of stuff. Well, yeah, that's all well and good, but that's just not how you build championship teams anymore. So, you know, it does make it to where if you're not one of the big market teams, you once again feel like you're rooting for the Washington Generals, the Nuggets, the Pelicans. All those teams are kind of there just to be fodder for the big marquee franchises. So it was a frustrating weekend to be a Nuggets fan because it feels like the people who don't do it right get rewarded and the people who do it right, just continue to have to kind of fight uphill.
Who should the Nuggets be looking at during free agency that could get them to that even playing field with the Golden State Warriors, the LA Lakers? Right now we're talking about looking up at those guys. Who do they go after? Who do they realistically have a chance to get where now they are not looking up, but they're looking to the right and they're seeing Golden State and they're looking to the left and seeing the Lakers?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, Orlando, is going to depend on what they decide to do with Paul Millsap. I mean, if they don't exercise the option to bring him back this year for $30 million or don't rework his deal, obviously they're going to have to go out and get a power forward. So, you know, is that a Julius Randle? Is it a Tobias Harris? Do they go younger at that position? I don't think either one of those guys puts the Nuggets in a position to where they're looking left or looking right, but certainly keeps them where they're at, because Millsap, you know, he's much maligned in this town because of the money he makes, but he plays an important role. Other than Jokic, he's the only low post scorer that this team has. He brings them a little bit of toughness, some veteran presence, so that would be a big loss. You know, I mean, I think if you're able to go out and get one of the big names, which the big names are different than they would have been if we were talking a week ago now with Durant and Klay Thompson being in a different position. But, you know, Kawhi Leonard would put him in that position. They're just never going to get him. So, you know, I think they're probably looking at more of a Trevor Ariza type of a guy where you're getting a player who's been in those big moments, has that experience, can knock down the open outside shot, can play some defense. I mean, really, they need to go out and get somebody to play Will Barton's position. It isn't Will Barton. They can play within the system, knock down big shots, and defend. That's the kind of guy they need to get. I don't know that puts them in position to where they're looking left and looking right at the Lakers and the Warriors, but it certainly would improve their team.
45 seconds, James. All that offense this weekend between the Rockies and Padres, that a good thing or is it a bad look at all?
It's a bad look. I mean, look, it's partially a bad look because I'm frustrated because they lost two out of those four games, Mike. So that's part of it. But the Coors Field narrative that we all get sick of hearing, there's reasons why it exists. And that kind of a weekend where it's like going and watching four softball games is the biggest reason why. It's you put up those kind of numbers and then you go to Milwaukee for playoff games and you score one run in two games. That's why the Coors Field narrative exists. And as long as you have those kind of four-game sets, it's never going to go away.
All right, James, great stuff. Check out everything that James has to write about, opine about, be mad about at 1043thefan.com. Thank you, James.
Thanks, fellas.
All right, James Merrillat. Coming up, Orlando, I need to get your expectations. I've heard from Mark. I've heard from Nick Ferguson. I got to hear from you. After a busy offseason, your expectations for the Denver Broncos this year. That's next.